én koferidem, jaz nazaj. Pa te samo ostane, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa treba, ne. In jaz prijem tam, pa prema vrata, pa ne ideš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna in ošla.
Riz.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in to je siv. Siv, ne ta nemški občaj, ne, črn pa to ne. Prav tista prava volk. Krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudeh, ki ustvarjajo duh časa. Na Radiju Študent.
Prezapleten klopčič na afriškem rogu. Afriški rog, območje, ki obsega Somalijo, Kenijo, Etiopijo, Eritrejo in Džibuti, je zopet v ospredju medijske pozornosti. A razlog tokrat niso spopadi med somalijsko prehodno vlado in islamističnimi uporniškimi skupinami, znanimi kot Al-Shabab. Državljanska vojna v Somaliji traja namreč že 20 let, posledično pa država ravno toliko časa nima delujoče vlade. To se seveda odseva tudi v nesposobnosti države, da se sooča z aktualnim problemom, ki zadeva tudi širšo regijo. Le to je namreč prizadela najhujša suša v zadnjih 60 letih. Zaradi odvisnosti tega območja od kmetijstva pa se je po skoraj 20 letih zopet pojavila lakota. Združeni narodi so že julija razglasili lakoto v dveh pokrajinah na jugu Somalije. Od takrat pa se je razširila tudi na druge pokrajine, vključno z glavnim mestom Mogadišem. Lakota tako grozi skoraj 15 milijonom ljudi v Keniji, Somaliji in Etiopiji. Združeni narodi lakoto razglasijo, ko število hudo podhranjenih otrok preseže 30%, ko več kot dve osebi na 10 000 umreta na dan in ko ljudje nimajo dostopa do hrane in ostalih potrebščin. Vse to je v afriškem rogu izpolnjeno. Begunci z juga Somalije bežijo na sever in proti jugu, kjer pa jih v prenapolnjenih begunskih taboriščih čakajo grozne razmere. Dodatne probleme povzročajo spopadi v Somaliji, kjer uporniki po poročanju medijev mednarodnim humanitarnim agencijam v nekaterih predeljih države ne dovoljujejo opravljanja njihovega dela, čež da so politične. Al-Shabab prav tako ne priznava obstoja lakote, bili naj bi zgolj manjši problemi s sušo. A kako je do nove lakote sploh lahko prišlo? Kot izpostavljajo poznavalci, je problematično predvsem dolgoletno pomankanje investicij v kmetijstvo. Leta 2003 so se vodje afriških držav sicer zavezali, da bodo do leta 2008 v ta sektor države začele vlagati najmanj 10% državnega proračuna, a so le redke države to zavezo, ki je sicer postavljena prenizko, izpolnile. Govorili smo s Šukrijem Ahmedom, višjim ekonomistom pri Organizaciji Združenih narodov za hrano in kmetijstvo in ga za začetek prosili, naj predstavi stanje, v katerem se nahaja kmetijstvo v državah afriškega roga.
Well, agriculture, yes, in the broader sense, including crop and livestock production, at this moment in time, it is poor, and dire, but it is not the whole picture, because some areas that produce crops, which are the highland parts, for example, of Ethiopia and western parts of Kenya, are actually doing relatively better. The livestock areas, this is mainly the lowland areas to the south and southeast of Ethiopia and the eastern and northern parts of Kenya. But above all, Somalia, the agro-pastoralist and pastoralist areas of Somalia have been very much affected by dry weather, which has been, it is one of the worst droughts that we have seen for the last 60 years.
Since agriculture is basically existential for the people living in that region, apart from drought, what are the biggest difficulties this region is facing in the field of agriculture?
That's a very good question. And I think that is what we need to ask. And there are a lot of studies that had been done in the lack of investment in the agricultural sector. Agriculture has not been seen or given the importance that it should have been given for the last several years. Some of the countries now in the region have started to give agriculture the attention that it deserves, and they started to actually follow the agreement, what we call the Maputo Agreement of the African heads of African governments, where each country is supposed to have a minimum of 10% of their budget, annual budget, to be allocated to agriculture. Some of the countries now, like Ethiopia, have fulfilled that, but still it is not enough. Even that number is very low, according. But when you take the whole of Africa, most of the countries are even investing less than 10% of their budget is allocated to agriculture. So there is a systematic disinvestment or lack of investment in the agricultural sector. And with population growth and all this, there is a lot of depletion. So you can see the problem that the agricultural sector in general, that is both crop and livestock, is facing.
How do you explain this lack of investment?
Well, it is just a matter of priority. Some of the economic models and policies that have been followed usually do not favor, or at least in the past, did not favor agriculture. Industry and the service sector were more invested upon, and agriculture was simply seen as a source of revenue and a source of taxation to finance other sectors, which are supposed to be modern, But however, with all this agricultural, food problems in the world, and with the growth in population, where the demand for food is growing exponentially, there is now a realization in these countries that there has to be a big investment in agriculture. But the realization now is even more pronounced in the international arena. The G20 now have taken up food security and investment in agriculture as a top priority. So you can see that now with all these high prices in the world, there is now a realization that we really need to have a paradigm shift in terms of investing in agriculture, in terms of innovations in agriculture, science and technology in agriculture. That is now where we are.
Could you specify in what specifically should the local governments and the international community in that region invest in?
Well, in the short term, now that there is a problem of drought, and many people now, as you have rightly seen in the news and everything, so we need to save lives now. So the first thing is, feeding the people and getting the food in place now where the villages are before people started to move out. They have already started moving out. You have seen it, refugees in Kenya, in Ethiopia, and they have traveled harrowing days and days, for hungry people to move such a long distance. The conflict is the biggest problem in Somalia. The humanitarian agencies are not able to get in. So we have to find some ways of getting the food in, by opening humanitarian corridors and by any other means also necessary. But in the medium to longer term, we have to start thinking now. So it's not only food, but we have to save livelihoods also. We have to invest in livestock. We have to have the water points for livestock. These people depend on livestock. in normal times, these people export hundreds of millions of dollars worth of livestock. It just is that these markets in certain areas were not well developed, and they're not connected to the market. Most of these people actually are able to feed themselves. And beyond, actually, they export and help the countries. So it's just that we didn't get it right. It's not that there is a bit of a distortion when we see these things that we think these people are simply dependent on this. And it, even if you see the percentage of the population in the region, the whole of these now Horn of Africa region, that even the three countries, it's more than 130 million people. And we're talking about now up to 12 million people being affected. So you can see others are already, so we need to invest in the agricultural sector. And this, as I said earlier, it is building markets, it's building roads to these areas, connecting these people to national and international markets. These are the most important, but also, you know, having the innovative ways into the agriculture and the livestock sector.
There is, of course, a lot of various types of organizations working in that region. How is FAO collaborating with those organizations, and do you divide the work between the various organizations?
Yes, even the appeal process is done in one. All the different agencies have identified their areas of expertise, their comparative advantages, and the appeals are made as one, so that these different units, it is known, you know, the needs, whether it is for refugees, whether it is for water, whether it is for health, for agriculture, for livestock. So this is put in a framework, and this is done in conjunction with the countries of the region. For example, the government of Kenya, the government of Ethiopia are actually leading this process, and the partner agencies, whether it is UN, other international agencies, NGOs in big way, all are working under that, we call it them clusters, the food security clusters, in which they actually do their appeals and their interventions in a harmonized way.
If we talk about the collaborations between, for example, FAO and the local governments, how do you view the capability of local governments to distribute this aid and to manage this process?
Well, some countries are much more stronger than others because they have a better organization. But the problem, the biggest problem now is in Somalia. And the Somali government has to be assisted really tremendously because of the conflict in the country, there is a lot of loss of the infrastructure and the capacity of the country to actually cater for the people and to get the assistance in place. So that is where a lot of the humanitarian agencies now are trying to assist the Somali people and the Somali government to get the assistance where it is needed in time, and that is where we have. The other governments, they have good structures, they have strong disaster risk management and also response mechanisms. They need to be strengthened, of course, and with the magnitude, they would need extra assistance in terms of finance, in terms of other logistics. But I think the structure is in place.
Of course, drought right now is the biggest concern. It has caused the latest famine. But can the threat of drought be eliminated completely with new technologies maybe? Or will drought be always a constant in that region?
Well, drought will be always there. I mean, at least in the short term that we know, because the area is a drought-prone area. But it doesn't have to transform itself into a humanitarian emergency. I mean, this is the main issue. There are resources in the area. Governments and the people need to be able to make use of those resources so that when droughts come, they are able to withstand it. So you have to have mitigation measures. You have to have, you know, preparedness for these things. But those need now capacity development. They need investment. They need finance. With first and foremost, of course, the governments in the area and the people in the area, but it is also needs a lot of international assistance. There is now a big understanding of that to implement at the international level. What needs to be done has been studied. There are a lot of studies that have identified different interventions, a cohesive program to intervene so that the immediate assistance is linked to the medium and longer term. These now need to be implemented. But to implement it, you need funding, you need finance. And that is, first and foremost, as I said, it has to be the responsibility of the governments in the area, but the international community need to assist as well.
The last famine in Somalia was, I think, in the beginning of the 90s, 91, something like that, 92. Can you explain, please, how come the world hasn't prevented a new famine in that area, even though it is well aware of the problems of drought and the technologies are no problem, the finance should be no problem? So how come the world allowed a new famine?
That's a very good question. But at the end of the day, also, it is the conflict. You know, usually droughts turn into famine situation only when there are conflicts and situations which are intolerable in terms of governance. It's just unacceptable that a drought transforms itself into a famine unless there is a governance issue, whether it is from the capacity within or the capacity without, should be mobilized immediately. But usually you will find these famines happening when there are restrictions, when there are conflicts, when there are problems. The same thing happened in 91, 92, the same thing now. So it is this conflict that is protracted that is at the root of this issue. And of course, conflict again then relates to underdevelopment, marginalization, disinvestment or lack of investment in the areas for a long time. And these are feeding each other. And this vicious cycle need to be stopped.
You've mentioned before that one of the major problems is lack of finance. How do you view Europe's activities in dealing with the current humanitarian crisis in Somalia and other countries in the region?
Well, generally, the European countries, whenever they can, are generous. And they are actually, at the moment, assisting in big way, especially the humanitarian interventions. However, the sustainability of livelihoods in the area needs much more than that. And unfortunately, when emergencies like this happen, there is a big rush. Then for a while it goes on, and then when rains come and people start to be at least, you know, better, things are forgotten. And this happens not only with the European. This is not one or other area, but generally whether it is governments and whatever, they immediately take other priorities. And unfortunately, development and investments take a long time to show fruit or to show their results. And these usually are not easy to finance or easy for to get money for these long-term investments. But I think we don't have an alternative. We are seeing that the world really needs to invest in agriculture in big way with new technologies. Now the world has awoken to that. And as I said earlier in the G20 meeting as well, at the highest level of the developed countries, it has become now central. It has become a priority. And let's hope it will continue.
Organizacija Združenih narodov za hrano in kmetijstvo ni sama pri reševanju težav v tem delu Afrike. Na terenu je med drugimi že dolga leta prisotna mednarodna nevladna organizacija Oxfam, ki je predvsem aktivna na področju zagotavljanja čiste pitne vode in sanitarij. Poleg tega se ukvarjajo s poučevanjem ljudi o nujnosti skrbi za higieno zaradi izbruhov bolezni, vodijo pa tudi terapevtske centre za podhranjene otroke. Po nekaterih ocenah naj bi regija potrebovala okoli 1,5 milijarde evrov, da bi sanirala trenutne težave s sušo. Evropska unija je zaenkrat prispevala okoli 100 milijonov evrov, obljubila pa še nadaljnjih 60. Louisa Bellingerja, tiskovnega predstavnika Oxfama, ki se trenutno nahaja v Keniji, smo vprašali, ali so zadovoljni z odzivom Evropske unije.
Are you satisfied in Oxfam with the reaction of, for example, the European Union regarding aid in this current crisis?
Well, I think they've woken up a little bit late. I think the last month has been very good in terms of quite a bit of pledges have been made. The EU has made the ECHO and the European Union itself has done some pledged some good amount of money, but European countries individually, that's a different story. I think the United Kingdom, so Britain, has done very well, but countries like France or Italy have not given their share of for Somalia, and that's what we're looking into the next few weeks when agencies and the UN are boosting their aid effort on the ground. We need to the donors to keep pace with that, because more people will need help, and we're looking into reaching more people in the next coming weeks, but we need donors to follow and to keep pace with that demand.
Donors are, of course, quick to pledge money, but when it comes to actually paying up, sometimes the reality isn't as promised.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I think we've had, now we're looking at a little bit over $250 million that have been pledged, as you say, but not committed. So it means that it hasn't been attributed to a certain country, to a certain program, to a certain area, and that's problematic. So we call on all donors to make sure that they not only pledge the money, but really sort of follow suit and have a clear idea of where that money is going to go. We're still in the red, if you want to call it that. It's more or less, it's over $700 million now. So there's still a huge gap to fill, and we hope to fill it very soon.
Ali je omenjenih 160 milijonov evrov dovolj, smo vprašali Michaela Mena iz Urada visoke predstavnice Evropske unije za zunanje zadeve in varnostno politiko.
Well, the European Union, not only the Commission, but also the member states make these contributions to the famine and the drought victims. We have recently increased with an immediate allocation of 27.8 million euros. There's going to be another announcement today of another 175 million euros of development aid. So we are doing everything we can. I have to say, of course, that it's not only the European Union who will have to chip in to help the situation, but we are by far the biggest donor, and we have expressed the willingness to do a lot, and we are willing to do more in the future.
Revščina, brezperspektivnost in desetletja izkoriščanja naravnih bogastev strani tujcev predstavljajo plodna tla za alternativno soočanje s problemi. Nekaj časa so bili tako ljubljenci svetovnih medijev tudi somalijski pirati, ki sicer sebe označujejo za varovalce morja, članice Evropske unije pa so prispevale svoje zračne in pomorske vojaške sile, da bi ukrepale proti piratom in varovale obstoječe trgovske poti, pa tudi omogočale dovoz humanitarne pomoči po morju. V luči lastnih interesov unije in aktualne krize smo Michaela Mena vprašali, kakšno sploh je stališče Urada visoke predstavnice Evropske unije za zunanje zadeve in varnostno politiko do te regije.
What is the position of the High Representative of the Union for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy on the crisis in the Horn of Africa?
Well, I mean, the whole European Union, the High Representative and the members of the Commission are responsible for this, are extremely concerned, obviously, about the situation there. You have obviously these terrible pictures of the famine and the drought victims in several countries. You have scenes of people fighting in the streets. You have reports of aid having trouble getting through. And so we're very concerned. Obviously, the European Union has done a lot recently to try and help the situation. We've increased our sort of emergency humanitarian aid. There's going to be a decision today to make more development aid available as well. So we're trying to sort of help with the immediate crisis as well as helping with the longer-term rebuilding of these countries.
Does the High Representative view the crisis in that region as a security issue?
Well, I mean, the things are all kind of interlinked. There is obviously fighting going on in Somalia. There's obviously the African Union mission there to try and keep the peace. And also you see piracy happening on the coast of Somalia, off the coast of Somalia. And this is obviously linked into the fact that people are in a certain degree of economic crisis, and some people unfortunately decide to take the law into their hands. So there is, of course, a security aspect to this, and that is why our development work in Somalia and in the other countries is about trying to build up the rule of law, trying to build up democratic institutions, and also trying to support the economy so that people have a real economic future rather than turning to crime.
Seveda pa edini moteči faktorji niso zgolj kriminal, revščina in vremenske neprilike. Tu so še čisto politične ovire. Omenimo meje med državami, ki velikokrat delijo plemena, poleg tega pa onemogočajo ljudem proste prehode iz ene pokrajine v drugo v zasledovanju virov za preživetje. Kakšna je torej vloga teh arbitrarno začrtanih državnih mej v trenutni krizi? Odgovarja Louis Bellinger iz Oxfama.
Yeah, it's a great question because we've seen this recently in Kenya, for instance, where pastoralists used to go and used to be able to go to Sudan, they used to be able to go to Ethiopia, and right now it's increasingly difficult. So it's a great question, and I think it's something that we often ignore, right? And it is a reality, you know. If every year in the past you've been able to, you know, go with your animals, because that's what people, and I don't know, people in Slovenia can picture that, but you know, in a lot of these countries, a huge percentage of the population live off the animals, and they are pastoralists, and they go and they cross border and then come back for the harvest. So if they're not able to do that, of course it affects their ability to keep the animal healthy and, make a living off what is already a pretty difficult, way of living your life by going for months and months with your animal. So if you're not able to access some of those green areas because they're just across the border and because there's ethnic tensions, then of course it has a direct impact.
Kakšno vlogo pa igrajo v trenutni krizi vodilne multinacionalke na področju prehrambene industrije? To smo vprašali Šukrija Ahmeda iz Organizacije Združenih narodov za hrano in kmetijstvo.
I think to put it in context, yes, high international prices, especially of food, always have impact to some extent. However, in these specific countries, most important thing is actually domestic production rather than the international high prices. When crops are good, even when international prices are high, prices tumble. And we have seen this now even in 2008, 9, 10, when we had good rains and good crops in these areas, prices were very much low while international prices were high. Actually, more important is high fuel prices. These affect these countries more and directly with the transport cost and others. And having said that, I think we have seen already the main solution for these countries is to boost national production, and there is a capacity for that. The solutions for their food security situation.
Kot smo slišali, ni elegantne rešitve za obstoječo krizo. Kronično pomankanje vlaganja v kmetijstvo, revščina, oboroženi spopadi, nedelujoča vlada in huda suša so enostavno prezapleten klopčič, da bi ga z lahkoto odvozlali. Ob reki beguncev in milijonih, ki jim grozi smrt zaradi lakote, se zdijo spopadi med somalijsko vlado in uporniki za prevlado v državi toliko bolj bizarni. In verjetno se prav v končanju tega konflikta skriva ključ do prekinitve smrtonosnega cikla znosne in neznosne revščine. Zeitgeist je pripravil Boris Vasel, tehniciral je Božo, brala sem Polona.
In ko pridem jaz nazaj, je pa te samo stan, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa treba. In jaz pridem tam, pa vrata, pa meniš. Pa tam dol zagledam. Zagledam Madonna in ošlo.
Riz.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in tudi siv, ne ta nemški očaj, črni baton, prav tista prava volna. Krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa. Na Radiu Študent.